CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing at Real Clear Politics of a new book that's in Hebrew and being translated into English, Micah Goodman's The Eighth Day, Israel After October 7th. Peter, a very good evening to you. Following your reporting, what I understand is we have two ways of talking about what's happened, the tragedy in Israel right now. One way is to talk about the protests from January 2023 until October 6, 2023, the protests having to do with the combination of the Supreme Court, the jurisprudence of Israel, the Netanyahu government, the four or five elections that had not resolved the conflict between left and right, all of that till October 6th. And then the October 7th attack, which at this point looks to have united much of Israel in its mission to deal with the threat, the existential threat of Hamas, Hezbollah, the West Bank, the Houthis, Iran, other bad actors in the area. Those are two Israels, and this book looks to address them. Something called the virus of polarization. How does it all fit together, Peter? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, you gave a very nice distillation. Micha Goodman, who's an important Israeli thinker, devotes the first section of his book to explaining what he calls a meriva ve'amilchama, the quarrel and the war. And these are two parts of the Israeli character. But on the morning of October, in the evening of October 6th, many Israelis, both those the supporters of the government and those in the opposition, believed that the other side was tearing the country apart, believed that they had little in common with the other side, and believed that their country's democratic future was under threat from the opposing camp. These apocalyptic views were shared by both sides. Then a real apocalypse happened on October 7th. Israel was invaded by thousands of jihadists. We've discussed on many occasions the savagery, the brutality, the butchery, and the kidnapping. What Israelis discovered about themselves in the days and weeks following the atrocities was that they shared a unity of purpose, a devotion to country, despite the serious, the deep political grievances. 300,000 soldiers reported for reserve duty. This, by the way, would be the equivalent of around 10 million Americans reporting for military duty. Israelis, civilians were preparing meals for the soldiers. As the months passed, were providing health care and counseling services for the 200,000 people who were displaced, were picking crops in the fields in the north and south. A stunning kind of unity was revealed, and Goodman's mission is to make sense of this, or really to put a finer point on it, to figure out how Israel can preserve the unity and put behind itself what you nicely call the virus of polarization.
I press the point because my reporting on Israel's protests those many months is from a great distance, and you travel there often. The protests appeared to me, an outsider looking in, to have started at some point about aspects of the Constitution that are unclear or inconsistent. For example, the Supreme Court has both accusatory powers, it can allege, it can indict, and adjudicating powers. In other words, it's prosecutor and jury at the same time. That's what it appears to the outside. And it appears to the outside that there was a correction underway or a proposed correction that would have been a law that was eventually suspended or watered down. I can't remember the details. Mm-hmm. However, also, Peter, in those many months, and I'm only hearing it from Israel, I'm not there, it turned more into a protest against Netanyahu. It was personalized. Do I remember correctly, or is there a distinction between the criticism of Netanyahu and the defense of the Supreme Court the way it is now?
I think you've got it basically right, John. I'd only add this. In my mind, and I think in the minds of many many sharp observers in Israel, the Supreme Court was desperately in need of reform. It had become the most activist Supreme Court in the Western world. It didn't require any special rules for standing to bring a complaint. You didn't have to have been injured yourself. It treated almost any issue that could arise in Israeli politics as justiciable. Nothing like our Supreme Court system, in which you have to been directly injured, and not all questions can come for the Supreme Court. So judicial reform was necessary, but the reforms proposed, the judicial overhaul package proposed by the Netanyahu government, many people think, I'm one of them, went too far. And so what began as protests against the specifics of the judicial reform was sort of supercharged with the accusation that Netanyahu was seeking to neutralize the Supreme Court because of the legal problems he faced. In any case, what began on January 4th as specific protests against the judicial reforms, by the summer was, as you suggested, a generalized protest against the Netanyahu government. Both sides, the government defending itself and the opposition attacking the government, thought that the other side was an enemy of democracy, and that's where Israel stood on the morning of October 7th.
I also remember a very large turnout. At nighttime, I believe, it was well lit around the ministry protesting the Netanyahu government. And there was a step back from the initial reform to a watered-down version. I don't remember. The Knesset was much at sea. It's all lost now because of the violence since October 7th. But that large turnout, was that significant electorally? In other words, that the size of that group, did that suggest that Netanyahu had lost the trust of his people?
It suggested he lost the trust of a significant proportion of the Israeli electorate, because not only did tens of thousands protest regularly in Jerusalem, but tens if not hundreds of thousands in Tel Aviv and around the country. Moreover, the polls showed that by late spring, early summer of 2023, if elections were to have been held, they probably would have been the largest party probably would have been that led by one of the opposition leaders, Benny Gantz, and that he would have had enough seats to form a coalition. But nevertheless, Netanyahu maintained hold on his 64-seat majority in the 120-seat Knesset. He remained the duly elected prime minister of Israel, and that's the position he had on the morning of October 7th when the jihadists burst through Israel's security barrier.
One more detail, Peter, to help people in the U.S. understand the Israeli governance. It's a vote where you don't have to represent what there's a party list, and that's what the vote is about. So you're not representing a geographic region, you're representing a party. And the Knesset, the Israeli legislative body, is often made up, and as far as I know, always has been made up of coalitions in order to achieve 61 seats. That gives you the majority government. Therefore, we're not talking about the majority want this or the majority want that. It has to be translated into parties. And all during those many elections in 22, 22, 23, the Likud, Netanyahu's party, would have the most seats. Is that still accurate? Is he understood to still have not a majority, but the most seats after the election?
No longer. When in the most recent election, the one that brought him back to power in November 2022, Netanyahu's party, the Likud, won 32 seats, and he formed a coalition with the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredim, who had 18 seats, and with religious nationalists who had 14 seats. That adds up. That should add up to 64. And as you suggested, John, it has always been the case that Israel has relied upon coalition governments. But according to polls today, and this has been true for about 9 months, Netanyahu's Likud party has fallen from 32 seats. Polls shift, but anywhere from, let's say, 16 to 20 seats. I think that those are the latest estimates. And Benny Gantz's party, the National Unity Party, would would obtain the most votes if election were held and probably be able to form a coalition. But as you know, those are polls. The game, the election, is another matter.
Now we come to October 7th. I'm speaking to Peter Berkowitz, writing at Real Clear Politics of a book, The Eighth Day, in other words, the day after October 7th, Israel After October 7th by Mika Goodman. It's not translated into English yet. Soon enough, when we come back, what happened on October 7th, especially about Zionism? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.